CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 117, with Dr. Deborah Ristved, navigating the different phases of your career and of your life. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today I have a very special guest. This special guest, as you know, is an upcoming superstar in the ophthalmology world. You see it on the podium so many times. I see in the print journals all the times. Now we just got to get more videos of you doing surgery.
Yeah, Dr. Deborah Ristved,
welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Uday. It's a pleasure. And it's so fun because I feel like, you know, every time I sit down with you, I learn so much about not only cataract surgery and surgical experiences, but also on life. You bring it when it comes to mentoring and just bringing so much, you know, knowledge and information. So thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. I've made a ton of mistakes. And so like, if other people can learn from my mistakes, it's like even better. So that's part of the challenge. You know, it's in retrospect, wow, I should have really done something differently. God, we don't see it. It's the hindsight that's 2020.
But that's what's like so amazing about you is because you're vulnerable and you're open and you're honest about those experiences because we all go through that, right? And right. I think so many of us are, you know, so scared to talk about our failures. And that's what really makes us more wise and more successful over time.
Yeah, I always think of it this way, that every success and every failure, they're on the same road. Like if I want to get better at tennis and I lose today's match, doesn't matter. I got better. I learned some skills. I practiced some skills. I'm still on that same path of hopefully becoming a pretty good tennis player. So it doesn't matter if I lose or win, as long as I'm keep putting in the effort to go in that direction.
That's so true. And if you read, I just read this book, it's called Outliers. It's so good. Sure. But it talks about, you know, a lot of times to become skilled in something, whatever it is, it's like 10,000 hours to become an expert. I mean, 10,000 hours. And so, you know, sometimes we're so hard on ourselves and, you know, it's all about having true grit and not giving up and just utilizing those circumstances to learn and to do things better.
Yeah, I like the book as well. The Malcolm Gladwell book, Outliers. Yeah, yes. The number was 10,000 hours, which, I mean, certainly we've done that. I mean, look at the path you've been on. For sure we've done it. 10,000 is no problem.
I know, but that's like the fun thing. You know, I'm 44. And so I've been in practice since 2011. I joined my dad as a third generation ophthalmologist. And just from then to now, you know, the things that, you know, I've experienced through time, life situations, seasons of life, raising kids, being a mom, and, you know, being, you know, an ophthalmologist and running my own practice. Man, you know, you look at all of those, you know, kind of seasons of life and today, you know, but it's like I had to put in those hours to really be, you know, kind of operating at the true level of joy I'm operating at today. And so I'm so thankful, you know, for that time and those seasons of growth and also for pushing myself, right? Because if I would have said, oh man, you know, I'm not going to do this because I'm scared I won't be enough, or, you know, oh, I can't do that. I'm a comprehensive ophthalmologist, you know, but now say, look at the MIGS space, the minimally invasive glaucoma space. If I wouldn't have had the courage to say, this makes sense, I believe in it, I wouldn't be again doing what I'm doing now. So it's kind of neat to look back on your journey as well.
Yeah, for sure. I like what you said about kind of phases. And the same way you look at your kids, and they're very different from newborns to toddlers to preschoolers to like elementary school. They keep changing. And we do the same in our careers. Like, I just think back, like, kind of first FACO I did as a resident. Ugh, how embarrassing. Right? And then now, tens of thousands of cases later, it's like, that's pretty good.
Yes. And, you know, we continue to get better. And I mean, Uday, I watch your videos every week because I'm constantly pushing myself to be better. And I always say I'm going to learn, you know, 1 to 2 new skills a year. Sometimes it's been more, you know, definitely more just with the evolution of technology. But man, like you just come to a point where you're like, I feel so much more comfortable now doing things that I thought I would never be doing 5 years ago.
Right. No, that's for sure. You kind of got to push yourself a little bit. You got to feel a little bit initially uncomfortable in order to like get those skills up and then be comfortable doing something for sure.
Totally. And I tell our team that all the time too. Like, get used to the uncomfortable, because that is where we grow. That's where we become excellent, is, you know, if we're really being, you know, kind of pushing forward, I should say, and not being complacent, because complacency is the worst thing we could do. And so my team has gotten used to that too, that I'm always thinking and evolving, but it's good. You know, I mean, we keep the fun up, and that's what's, you know, so special about our culture too, in our team, is that, you know, we bring in that.
Well, for sure. If you think back in that 10,000 hour number again, it's like, well, at the very, very, very minimum, as a resident, you did 50 hours a week. Probably more like 80 or 100, but call it 50. Well, 50 hours a week for 50 weeks a year, because you had 2 weeks off, is 2,500 hours a year. So your 4 years of residency were 10,000 hours. That's not nearly enough to master something in ophthalmology.
It's not.
Right.
It's not. And I think that's where it's like, I tell all these young bucks coming up, don't be discouraged, keep going, keep improving. And it's so cool to hear even older, you know, physicians talk about how they still go back to your videos, or they still go back to the drawing board to say, how can I make this technique better? And so that's what I love about you so much, is you're constantly encouraging people to think outside the box, but also to go back to the drawing board when it comes to things we do every single week. And that's cataract surgery. How do you make that perfect capsular rexus? How do you make, you know, a nice chop? And just showing the skill set there and slowing it down so that we really understand is so crucial.
For sure. And then I even pushed myself as well. Like, you know, a few years ago when I was working with residents still, I pushed myself to learn DMEC so I could teach the residents how to do it. That was not easy. The first couple DMEC cases were okay, but it wasn't until like I had 10 or 12 done that I was like, okay, that's pretty slick now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But gosh, I love that. And it just is so re-energizing too. And talking about new technology and new skills, you know, I feel like it's helped me in life to say, okay, what else can I do? What else do I want, you know, in my life? What goals do I have? And that's where, you know, I've really pushed myself even internationally to be able to do the really tough, tough cases so that I can go to Africa and so I can be excellent and bring the best technology and do my best, you know, surgery over there. And it's just expanded the scope of just, you know, how I'm living my life and how I'm teaching my kids. And that's just, you know, when you think about that whole, that mind, body, spirit, like that's exactly what these skills have done. You know, it continues, you know, to help you evolve as a person and to say, you know, what challenges can I take on and know how to do that?
Well, you've had a lot of international ophthalmology experience. I mean, you probably started pretty young because your dad was into that as well. I know that. But
yep.
That's, some people don't realize those are like the most obviously rewarding trips, but most technically surgically challenging. You have the densest cataracts, the worst possible cases, and the most antiquated equipment.
Yes.
And how it's so trips. Tell me.
You know, I look back, I was in my first year of medical school and I went with my grandpa and my dad. And, you know, just seeing the depth of pathology and these patients being walked in blind, but then the next day with a cataract surgery, walking out, seeing again and being able to see their loved ones and to be able to work again and to function in their home. It's just been such a rewarding part of what we do. And I really encourage everyone actually to, you know, go serve, go on a mission trip. I mean, you can do that right in your own community with those who don't have the means. And that's what's so rewarding about the field. And, you know, it's something that we don't take lightly. I mean, sight is so precious. But, you know, going over there, my mind was just open to, okay, you know, how can I help? But Uday, it took me 10 years to learn M6. You know, I maybe did one case in residency because we just don't do it anymore. And when you go to a place that, you know, electricity is on and off all the time, so you can't rely on that. You can't rely on, you know, necessarily sterilization that requires so much more efficiency on energy and whatnot, you have to get creative. And so, you know, we can bring a small set of instruments and do a beautiful M6 surgery where they have a clear cornea the next day. And so, you know, when you think about excellence, you know, maybe that person won't be the best candidate for phaco emulsification, but we still can provide just beautiful outcomes. And that was a whole skill set in itself to like have the courage to be like, I've never done this. And now I'm going into a part of the world where there's three ophthalmologists for 7 million people.
Wow.
And, you know, these people kept showing up and, you know, it was overwhelming because you just don't have enough hours in the day. But through that, we've gained a team. So we have a West African team that's doing outreach monthly. So it's not just me doing surgery. So last year we did 600 cataracts. We've started doing minimally invasive glaucoma surgery as glaucoma is the leading cause of blindness there. And so just like going back to the drawing board too, to say, okay, they're all coming in, you know, maybe with count fingers vision because of high pressures. But, you know, if I do a trabeculectomy, which may fail, or a tube shunt, that's, you know, a little harder to manage right now with the lack of support, you know, is that really what I want to be pushing? Or can we go back to the angle and can we put in iDose TR as well to really help to expand that outflow pathway so we reduce that pressure? And so that's kind of where, you know, it's become a passion of mine teaching other ophthalmologists there on how we do things, but then going back to be creative on how can we do this more cost effective and more efficiently. And so it's just been such a fun journey.
Well, for sure. A lot of these populations, you can't just prescribe them some drops to use every month for the rest of your life. It's not going to happen. They're going to be able to get the meds. So you need to have a surgical procedure. And like you said, a surgical procedure that is going to be efficacious, but not require tremendous amounts of post-op manipulation like a tube or a trab would.
Yes.
So MIGS is a great fit for these tips.
And also, you know, they don't take their drops, right? They're like, these aren't working, or they run out and they can't afford them. And so it's just not a great way of doing things. And so I think that's why, you know, when I speak here in the United States, interventional glaucoma comes so easily to me because I see it worldwide. I see it in Guatemala when I go, I see it in West Africa when I go, where it's like, oh man, if we had screening programs, even here in the United States, to get people in and do an SLT and then use drug delivery and minimally invasive glaucoma surgery. Can you imagine the waves we could make with, you know, preventing blindness? It's just incredible.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, definitely. If you're a young ophthalmologist and you've always thought about doing these things, do it. Get involved. You'll be amazed. It's really, it is quite an adventure.
Yes. And you come back, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, going out there, it's, know, just as good for you. I mean, it just, it provides so much perspective, you know, but also it's about, you know, establishing yourself in the culture and, you know, really going beyond just going, you know, for a week and leaving, you know, how can we help the ophthalmologist that is in country who wants to learn more or who needs support? And so it's really opened my eyes to that too, in terms of systems and sustainability.
Well, for sure, for sure. And I think one of the beauties of surgical video is we just equalize surgical learning in terms of having access to the knowledge. So as long as I'm alive, there are no more secrets. I give away all the secrets to the whole world. And I look at my data, I get viewers from ophthalmologists, obviously, from around the world, including some countries you would never expect. The views are small, but it's those few ophthalmologists there who are so dedicated to learning.
It's really neat. When I'm in West Africa, I mean, they talk about you and they're like, oh yeah, you know, it is so true though. Like, it's amazing. That's where they get their information and learning from. Yes. And so, you know, they're just like, I want to learn phaco emulsification. I want to get better. So we actually had a doctor from West Africa go on the Mercy ship to learn phaco emulsification. But oh, cool. He was saying that now he's been watching your videos. It's just so great. So, I mean, this impact is huge. And like you said, it shouldn't be a secret.
Right.
We should all make each other better.
No, yeah, I'm actually on the cataractcoach.com website. I actually have a free PDF book of the basics of learning phaco. And I have a 25-part free curriculum series starting off with, like, okay, patient selection. There's lesson two, okay, how do you do the anesthesia? How do you position the scope? How do you set up your phaco machine? I have everything covered. And obviously,
and everyone, it's all for free. Listen to this, because, you know, if you go anywhere or if people are hungry to learn, like, this is so easy to give them that information to say, yeah, this is where we can start. You know, let's, you know, go through these videos. And then you start to pick up those skills over time, because I've done it too quickly, you know, where I go over and I'm like, okay, let's start. Let's make the incision. You forget, you know, that, oh my goodness, they're like skilled M6 surgeons. Right. I mean, they are so good, but you know, they've never made a clear corneal temporal incision. Sure. And so it's like totally different. And so, yes, whoever is listening, you know, this is a great resource to really be able to give to others and spread that wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, for sure. And then not only for cataract coach is all anterior segment. Cataract coach is cataract, glaucoma, cornea, and refractive. So it's all the above. And now actually starting earlier this year, a few months ago, we have a sister channel for retina called retinarounds.com. And I have a retina colleague who does the same thing, committed to a new video every single day. And I've been watching the videos and, oh my gosh, I've been learning so much. It's like, it's my guilty pleasure.
Yeah,
Pretending that I'm learning retina. It's so much fun.
What sparked you to be like, you know, this is part of my passion and purpose, is to educate others? I've always been curious on that.
Well, I've always liked to teach. I've always liked to simplify things, make it easy. Like in OSN, Ocular Surgery News, I've been writing my back to basics column, which ended up being like basically one of the very most popular columns. This is my 20th year writing it, every month for 20 years. Yeah. And then the nice part about that is that it's really explaining the basic concepts, which has a huge applicability. Every ophthalmologist, whether you're 28 years old in residency or you're 70 years old in practice, you want us to let's refresh the basics.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I keep up with that. And then I taught at UCLA for 20 years. In fact, if you look behind me, all of those are my teaching awards. So most awarded professor in the history of UCLA. And so it was a fun thing to do. But then I stopped teaching at UCLA a few years ago, and now just dedicating more time to basically teaching the whole world. Why teach just one surgeon, one resident at a time, which is good. I can teach the whole world.
Yes. And I think that's what I would love to see. You know, I mean, I've really had this vision of, you know, how do we get the rest of the world caught up, you know, meaning, you know, how do we see less blind people, you know, like they've done with the Himalayan project, you know, in Africa, say, you know, we have a long way to go, but also skill sets. You know, you look here in the United States and there's, you know, only a certain number of us coming out of residency. And so if we don't continue to, you know, go back to the basics, become excellent, continue to learn, you know, I don't know if we're going to be able to really provide the patient care that they really need nowadays, because there's so much, you know, that's evolved over time. And it has to take like discipline though, Uday, to, you know, sit down, you have editing to do, you have, you know, really a lot that goes on behind the scenes when it comes to putting out these beautiful videos. Do you have any advice for me, you know, as I'm speaking on the podium or, you know, presenting a surgical case, like how do you get such a beautiful video?
Well, obviously the first thing I do when I go to my operating room in the mornings on surgery days is I go and set up the scope. I make sure that the focus of the camera is the same as the focus of my oculars, so that whatever I'm seeing is sharply recorded in focus. Second thing I do is I'll set the correct white balance, set the correct brightness. I do that before I start every time. And then I just record every case, but I record a little thumb drive that, like a dash cam. If it's just a routine case, I kind of just record over them. If it's something good, they save it. But I have a new video every day now. I've never missed a day. Today is day 2,550 something. It's been crazy.
Isn't that great?
It's a lot, but it's a ton of work. It's a ton of work. My best advice is, if you're lecturing on the podium, this is the absolute key. You want to be a fantastic speaker on the podium. One message is, give the lecture that you want to hear.
Yes. And
the lesson I want to hear is, get to the point. Show me some, all videos. I don't want to read slides. So in that regard, I never do a PowerPoint presentation. And in my lecture, if you say, give me a 10-minute lecture on this topic, on sonic exfoliation, it's a 9-minute and 45-second MPEG video file. And I'll go to the podium and I'll say, hey, hit play. And I'll just start talking over the video.
Yeah.
So first, I'll never be over. So the other speakers will respect me for not taking up their time. I mean, worse than ever is, if you're on a podium or panel with many doctors and you have 10 minutes to give your talk, you take 12 or 13, why are you cutting into someone else's time?
Right.
So I'll always be slightly under my time. And then, yeah, I just give a talk that, like, I can only remember a few things. I'm not the smartest guy. I'm just hardworking. So, like, just boil it down to very basic and give me like one or two things to just take home. And that's enough.
Yep. And then we're going to remember it, right?
Right.
Instead of, you know, pouring all this data, all these, you know, data points on a slide that you don't have time to really interpret and read. That's right. Such good advice. And I love how you really time your videos so that you never go over, because You're right. Like, that's probably the hardest thing about speaking. You know, I wasn't born to be, you know, on the podium or speaking. I just tell my story, right? I just tell my experience. Like, that's what's been so fun, is it's brought, you know, people like you into my life. You know, I have these beautiful friendships that I've, you know, made all over the United States and all over the world because of that passion for educating. And so I think that it's not about you. It's about, you know, how can I make someone else feel reassured in the audience? And what do I want to tell them that I wish I would have known? And I was so desperately seeking when I was in the audience.
No, that's absolutely so true. I think that's why you've done so well. I mean, when you're on the podium, I know it's going to be a great talk. I know it's going to be fun. It's going to be engaging. You're not going to read words off a slide. It'll be a great talk. I just know it.
But I am going to put more videos out there. You've inspired me.
Yeah, just get them out there. Well, certainly the day after your podcast, as to say thank you to you, I let the video of the day be your video. So this podcast will air probably mid to late June. And so if you give me a video, 5-ish minutes, we'll feature it the day after your podcast, so everyone can see something about your case. And we'll give all your links there to your own channels.
That is so cool. I love it. You know, my channel, we do a lot of funny reels on Instagram, but also I've started doing a podcast, kind of like an Instagram interview on In Her Shoes. And so I've started to... I've started to interview other women in our community that are really inspiring. So I've had an entrepreneur, I've had someone who has invented a new way of doing things in the beauty industry. I've had a pro golfer in my chair. It's just super fun to see kind of what makes people tick and what makes people successful. And I think, you know, a lot of it is exactly what you just said a moment ago. You know, you may not be, you know, the most intelligent Albert Einstein IQ, but if you work hard and if you don't give up and you are humbly learning from your mistakes, like, that's what makes you successful over time. And then perspective, right? Having a passion to say, you know, the what of what we do is, you know, eye surgery. The how we do it, we use technology and we have a beautiful team. But it's the why that makes us wake up every morning. And that was another key thing that I've noticed in interviewing all these women that have, you know, become really great in their fields, is that, you know, again, they have that purpose and that why.
Oh, that's so good. Wow. I love that input. I think another thing that's really helpful is that, like, I don't compete with anyone else. I compete against myself. And there's so many different roles that are available. Like, I have a podcast. Okay, you have a podcast, but they're different. Mine's an hour. You're talking to a surgeon. Yours is, no, the angle is In Her Shoes. And so it's just like, all you got to do is what makes you happy, and then just stick with it. And I promise you'll do well. You're not competing against anyone else.
But doesn't that feel good? Like, it took me so long in my career. Like, I had such bad imposter syndrome where I was always comparing myself, like, oh, I'm never going to be good enough, or, I'm not a great surgeon, or I'm not a good enough mom. Whatever it is, we have all these pressures on ourselves. But I think it is like self-induced. And the minute I just said, you know what? I'm just gonna be myself, and people can, either know the real me, or I can continue to hide behind the shell that, is not me. And I just feel like I've kind of, I don't know, become more awake and just so more, I don't know, joy filled, because I truly am living out what I was intended to do. And I don't have to do it your way. I don't have to do it my partner's way. Like, I can just be Deb, and that's enough. And that feels pretty good.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what you said in the beginning. It's like the different phases of life. When we're a resident or fellow or first couple years in practice, everyone, all of us, we all feel imposter syndrome. Like, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? Do I even belong here? But then you get
Yes.
comfortable in your own shoes, and now you're in the next phase. And so now you're the mid-40s phase. I'm a decade ahead of you. It just, honestly, it only gets better. It gets better and better.
And it really does. And then you find that, the biggest thing too in life is culture in your team, and it's leadership. It's not, again, about the bottom line or how many surgeries you do or how many patients you see in a day. And I love how my partner, Vance Thompson, says, a team that is loved and cared for will empower them to make sure that they care and love for their patients. And so it really is kind of setting that tone, like, oh man, if I knew what I did now, these are the things that I would do different. And so it's really leading from the bottom up now, and making sure that I'm a good mentor, that I'm taking care of my team, that I'm bringing our values into the office every single day, and really creating that culture where they have a part in this beautiful journey of eyesight and beyond. So that's been kind of fun to see in the last few years too, as I've become more confident in who I
Now, how did you partner up with Vance? So your grandfather and father were both ophthalmologists, and you kind of stepped into that practice, but then you made a big decision to pair up with Vance Thompson Vision. Tell me about that whole process and why and how did it work out?
Yeah, so 2011, I came back as a third generation ophthalmologist, joined my dad. He had built this beautiful practice in Alexandria, Minnesota. It's more rural. So he did everything. And as he retired, I assumed all of his patients in the practice. And I was seeing 50 patients a day, trying to go down to the basement to pump and then come back up and then go to the hospital and do my surgeries and come back. And I felt like I was on this hamster wheel, and I couldn't get off of it. And I'm like, gosh, I just don't know if this is truly how I want to be practicing medicine. And it really was meeting John Berdahl at the Hawaiian Eye. We shared a mutual patient after 7 years in practice. At the time when I was really thinking, like, what else can I be doing differently to really live out my passion in eye care? And so at that time, again, seeing established patients and comprehensive eye exams and going to the hospital to operate, where they told me that I could only have a certain amount of block time, that I couldn't have two rooms, that I couldn't do this amount of patients, that I was going too fast, you name it. And I'm like, oh, I need to be me. And so John and I kind of got to talking at the Hawaiian Eye, and he's like, well, why don't you come down to Sioux Falls and see how we do it? And it was just such a beautiful day of just like watching how the team flowed through and watching how their surgery center operated. And it really comes down to servant leadership, Uday. Like, they make sure that their team is good and that they take care of their team, because that makes, again, patient care so much better. And so they really have figured out, ways to, just get down to the core of what it means to serve. And so that's what I took away, you know, take out the fancy building, take out all the bells and whistles of technology. That's the secret, is just right. how they're serving and leading. And so, you know, after a few days, like, we kept talking, and then they offered me to join. And so I was the first non-fellow to join Vance Thompson Vision. Wow. I was fifth. I was the first female of the group. And so that was, you know, different too, because now I have all these brothers after being alone on an island by myself, and they are phenomenal. I mean, sure. I love them so much. But, you know, the nice thing about, you know, what they've developed, you know, we kind of run by, you know, our vision and values. That's how we hire people. And we really invest in doing the right thing, investing in the best technology, and making an experience second to none. And so if you guys haven't read Secret Service, that's a book that's been really inspiring to our team, just in how to make someone's day, whether it's, you know, a bouquet of flowers because it's their anniversary, or a little mug with candy because it's their birthday, or just, you know, writing a card of sympathy when someone loses a loved one. It's those little human touches that Vance really taught me was the core of how to love. So it's just been a fun journey. I love my partners so much. And now we've grown in the upper Midwest. And, you know, we continue to just have these wonderful surgeons in our practice that truly are humble, and they love on people and love on our team and our patients.
So for those who don't know, you're in a small town, Alexandria, Minnesota. So you're probably like 2 hours west of Minneapolis off of 94.
Yeah. You got then, it. Wow.
And then Vance in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is going to be probably like a 3 hours, maybe southwestish somewhere.
Yep.
So now you're pretty remote though. You're a few hour drive, but you're 3 hours away from the mothership, the Vance Thompson Vision. How does that work out?
Yeah, and that was, you know, something that we kind of had to, you know, build as we grew, because how do you keep the, you know, vision of what Vance Thompson Vision should be when you're not all in the same building? And that's where, you know, it's really been important to have Zoom. So, you know, during the day, I can actually see my partners if I log into Zoom rooms in Sioux Falls, in Fargo, in Bozeman. Wow. So I can kind of see them working at their desks. And, you know, if they have time, we'll hop on and say hi. So that's been like a cool little thing to connect us. And then, you know, just to really make the effort where we're all getting together as surgeons, you know, once a month to really talk about, you know, how everyone's doing, how the organization is doing. And then, you know, having, you know, kind of spin-offs of that, but just being intentional about that time together. And even like when we go to like ASCRS or Academy, we're always creating that dinner time for the VTV family. Mm-hmm. And so that's where all of our staff, team members from all over the upper Midwest are coming together, and we sit down for dinner as a family.
Well, that's very cool. That must be also very helpful to take some of the admin duties and bureaucracy off your plate to give you more time to focus on either patient care or your own growing family.
That has been huge. I didn't realize, you know, kind of what a stressor it was, because, you know, in private practice, you know, I was seeing 40 to 60 patients a day. And then I was going home, tucking the kids in, and then going back to the computer, doing my own scribing, doing my own billing and coding. We had a team of six, Uday. And now with building a new clinic and surgery center where we have a lot more flexibility in when and where we operate, we're up to 38 employees. Yes. And most of them are women. So God bless the like three men that are in our practice. But they're so good. But it's just so fun because not only in rural Minnesota have we created jobs, but we're creating this beautiful patient experience that's become a destination. And so I just love how we've really expanded that. And, you know, when you talk about how have you done that? Well, I took a comprehensive practice And then, you know, found these patients that didn't need me anymore a home. And so that's where it was so vital to create relationships with optometrists in our community, with other practitioners, so that I knew that our patients would be tucked in. And that really allowed me to do more surgery, to be able to expand in the skill set that I wanted to be excellent in, while someone else could do eye care or primary eye care at their best, highest level. And it's been this beautiful journey, because I thought, ooh, like, what? I'm not going to see these patients, or, you know, I'm going to hire optometrists and they're going to help me, you know, see these consults. So sometimes I don't meet the patient until a few days before to talk about, you know, their upcoming procedure. And so, you know, really it's that trust that's built in small encounters and making sure that you're looking at those details behind the scenes, but also finding people that are excellent around you so that we can all collaborate together to provide the best experience and the best care. And I think that's where, like, we're seeing medicine going, not only being more proactive instead of reactive, but also finding excellent people around you, administrative wise, or, you know, professionally, to be able to help you operate at your highest level.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, to delegate as much as you can. So there's one thing that you can do that basically no one else in the practice can do, which is the surgery, the procedure.
Yeah.
And so that's what you should focus your efforts on. You shouldn't have to do, let's say, routine primary eye care, refractions, or even things like answering the phone. You shouldn't be doing that. That should be delegated out to other people, and they can do it at their highest level. No, it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. So that was, you know, can you imagine, like, you know, my eyes being opened when I joined Vance Thompson Vision? I'm like, wait, you guys don't do that yourself? You have someone else doing it? Because I didn't know, you know, we were just this, you know, small practice. And my dad had a beautiful practice. And everyone loves Dr. Guess, you know, everywhere I go, oh, I love your dad. I loved your grandpa. And so, you know, I'm hoping I still can carry that into our practice and those, you know, key memories that, you know, I have from traveling overseas, or from the stories my grandpa would tell me when he was on the mission field. So I hope to keep some of that, but I also hope to continue to push myself to be Deb.
No, for sure. And then I think you have extra challenges compared to most. I'm in a huge mega city, Los Angeles, right? This is mega. But you're in a small town of what, probably 40, 50,000 people?
You got it.
So you do not just cataract or intersegment surgery, you do everything. You've been doing cosmetic stuff, oculoplasty. Yes. I mean, you've got to do essentially whatever walks in the door.
Yes. And that's where, you know, again, I love doing surgery, and I love to continue to push myself and to be creative too in how to optimize care. And that's where, you know, it's really allowed me the structure that I'm in. Has allowed me to individualize patient care, because I have time to really think about, man, you know, can we be doing something different, or why are we doing that? And, you know, get to the goal of the goal, finding those leverage points. And so, you know, it's been really fun to be able to expand that and to be excellent at it, because I don't want to be mediocre. And so not only, you know, is it important with cataract surgery, but, you know, you think about oculoplastics and the big scope that you have when it comes to, you know, what you're managing, from brow ptosis to ptosis to ectropion and tropion, all of that. And so that's been really fun to kind of be an expert in this area. And of course, I'm never going to say, you know, I'm fellowship trained. You know, I know where to stay in my bounds of, you know, safety and excellence. But at the same time, I've pushed myself so that I can be good. And so it's just really fun to be able to say, you know what, I want to learn this. So I go and watch someone, they, you know, tell me their techniques and give me some pointers, and then I take it back to Alexandria. And so what that's done is it's made me, you know, think, okay, what else can we do? So not only are we doing, you know, cosmetic, but we're also doing skin laser rejuvenation. And so at the time of a blepharoplasty, we can also reduce wrinkles and get rid of brown spots. And so while those patients have downtime, we've learned to really optimize our results in that capacity. And so that's kind of been fun, as well as, you know, you think of the glaucoma space. You know, I love, love, love glaucoma and minimally invasive glaucoma, interventional glaucoma. And that's the same thing. It's like, okay, where are the gaps here? You know, what do I need to train myself in so that I can, you know, operate at the highest potential of kind of what I'm capable of? And so that's why I continue to be so passionate about different things, because it opens up my mind to the possibility and it makes me push myself, you know, beyond where I thought I would be able to push myself.
Right, for sure. Well, I love the commitment to continued learning. Is that must be how you met my sister? I have a sister who did otolaryngology and that does facial plastic surgery. That's how you met her at some plastic meeting?
Your sister, Kay, is amazing. She's a skilled facial plastic surgeon. So we met because there's this new device coming out. It's called the Zip Lift. And so oculoplastics, it hasn't evolved as quickly, say, as cataract surgery or technology in our field. And so, you know, to have a new device in our hands that actually removes skin, and it's a sutureless procedure using glue, it's pretty neat. And so Kay and I have been, you know, one of the first surgeons to be able to use it on our patients. And so I love that, because then we can go back to the CEO, Dr. Beeler, to say, okay, we need to refine this. We need to change this. This could be better. But we're hoping that the Zip Lift device will create less bruising, less swelling, less downtime, and provide, you know, again, that sutureless technique. And beyond, you know, for easier healing. So it's been fun to be in this world and to meet your sister. I don't even know. I have to kind of like rip on you a little bit. I think she has like tons more followers than you do.
Oh my God. Like, so yeah, I only make videos for fellow ophthalmologists. She makes videos and content for like the world. So she's got, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of followers. She's amazing. She's my older sister. She was, and if she looks 10 years younger than me, but she's actually my older sister. Good. She's my older sister. She's the best sister ever. I was such a stinker, bad kid. She kept me in line. She protected me. She saved my butt my entire childhood.
Well, someone had to.
So bless her. She is an absolute angel. But then, you know, I also.
Were your parents ophthalmologists or?
No, neither.
No, they weren't physicians.
No, they're both MDs. That's how they got immigration to come to the USA. Both my parents have passed. So both my parents, you know, they lived good lives, but they've since passed. They were both physicians, but neither did ophthalmology or facial plastics or any of that. So we just did our own thing.
And that's pretty incredible that you both went into, you know, just such great fields.
Well, actually, it's me and three siblings. The four of us, we're all MDs.
Stop it.
Yeah, okay, but honestly, I'm the dumb one. I'm the least successful and the dumbest one. I'm not joking. I'm totally serious.
Well, I have major respect for you. And, you know, I have three kids, a girl and two boys. They're approaching kind of the preteen phase. So how do I get them to, you know, look into fields like medicine nowadays?
Well, is what your dad did for you, what your grandpa did for your dad?
Yeah,
or you could steal a line from my family. My family, the line is, when you grow up, you can be any kind of doctor you want, anything.
That's what my husband says.
Because he's a physician too?
No, but he tells our kids, like, when you grow up, you can be any doctor you want to be.
So your husband's quite a smart man.
But it's funny because, you know, taking them to Guatemala this last year, they wanted to be in the operating room helping. I just saw their eyes open to like the possibilities of what they could do. And they were talking about, oh, like I really like this. And so it was kind of fun. And I think that's what my grandpa and my dad did. They never told me to go into medicine, but they led by example. And so I saw how they were helping and, you know, really changing the world. And so I'm like, I want to do something like that. And my grandpa always said, you know, women should be ophthalmologists. They have these small, dainty hands. And so it was so cute. At 100 years old, he would go to the meetings and be like, you know, look at your hands. They're so small. It was so cute.
I got the big meaty size 8 hands. So it's
but they're steady. They're steady.
But yeah, no, it's I think I'm thankful every day that I'm an ophthalmologist. It's been such a blessing in life. I couldn't imagine doing anything else. So it's really a neat thing. Now, I want to ask you a little bit. You talked about working with some new startups in ophthalmology space or the plastic surgery space, but you're also really good, by reading your disclosure list, of working with a lot of important companies in ophthalmology to help develop the future of it and also help educate fellow physicians. How do you get involved? The most common question I get asked by young ophthalmologists is, how do I get involved in working with some of these companies?
You know, I remember when Allergan was Allergan, getting a letter to be like, hey, we would like you to participate in this advisory board. Right. And I reached out to John Berdahl as I was transitioning from Alexandria Eye Clinic to Vance Thompson Vision. We hadn't aligned yet, or we hadn't formed a partnership yet. And he's like, Deb, you should do that. They're really fun. And so I think because at that time I was a comprehensive ophthalmologist doing a lot of Zen implants, they wanted to kind of hear from, you know, a broad kind of range of ophthalmologists in different parts of the country. And so I got asked and I had so much fun because it's like you get to take a, you know, front row seat to what companies are really investing in their vision. And you get to learn from other ophthalmologists these beautiful new techniques that maybe you hadn't discovered yet. And now I feel like, you know, just with the relationships and with, you know, the investment in research that we do, that's really helped me to develop relationships in industry. And so, you know, just my passion for being able to put in an implant in the United States that's maybe not here yet, and to really get my hands on it and see how it works and how patients like it, and then tell that story and that feedback has been, you know, really instrumental in, you know, just kind of my journey and starting. But it really was, you know, finding what I was passionate about and telling about it, not trying to, you know, talk about something that I didn't know anything about, right? And so I think that, you know, different companies picked up on that, like, oh, she's doing a lot of this and, you know, we'd love to hear from her. But it was really getting involved in advisory boards. It was having dinners first in Alexandria, Minnesota, getting practice in front of our optometric referral, having the company sponsor us to do that, to, you know, again, being able to do booth talks at ASCRS or at the Academy for these companies that, you know, we had built relationships with through research or through, you know, education. And so I don't know why they keep asking me to be involved, like, honestly.
Well, you know what it is? Because you speak from the heart. I think the most important thing you said there, for a young ophthalmologist, if you want to be involved with industry and developing the next generation of products or educating fellow surgeons, the key is just focus on what you actually do in your clinic, what you actually enjoy, and what you actually know. And if you can talk about those things, it's super natural, super easy. There's nothing to memorize. You don't have to learn. You're already doing it.
That's right. And you can be authentic. Right. You know, and that's where I've found, you know, that is the I don't know, most inspiring place to be is, you know, when you can really say, I wonder how I can do things better, and then tell about it and talk about it to other colleagues. And so how to get involved, like how to first get asked, I would say, you know, if you have an opportunity to give your feedback to your rep. You know, just I've noticed this about this device. And then, you know, remember your reps go to their managers go to their DMs and beyond to say, hey, they've got something to say. I think we should listen. Right. And so that's kind of how
snowballs.
I
started. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then it snowballed to where, you know, now I'm in the room with, you know, people way beyond my skill set and knowledge, you know, and trying to do the best I can to give my feedback from my perspective. But again, it's really being authentic and starting small. And then, you know, telling your rep, I'd really be interested in getting more involved.
Yeah, the key is the authenticity. You are so right. It will take you as a speaker in ophthalmology, a key opinion leader, as we say, or KOL, it'll take you 10 years to build credibility. It'll take you 10 minutes to lose it.
Yes.
So just be authentic. That is so important.
It is so important. And I remember, Uday, you know, one of our reps talking about a KOL. Oh, they speak for so many companies, this and that. And so we don't really want them on the podium. I'm like, why not? They're truly telling you how they use every single device within their practice and how they individualize patient care. That's actually the person that you want, not the one that just does cookie cutter every single time to every patient. Right. I mean, you can't fit, you know, a square peg in a round hole. I think that's what they say, right? And so I actually love it when you find these people and they have like 30 different organizations that they speak for and they do it authentically. That's the key. But it's like, you know, knowing these people as friends now, I'm just like, oh my goodness, they're living and breathing what they're talking about. And they're doing it in such a beautiful way. And so, you know, it's just funny, the perspectives and how they change over time.
Yeah, for sure. And I will tell the young ophthalmologist that don't do it for revenue, because you'd make far more revenue per hour or per day in your own clinic, in your own operating room. That's so not the purpose of this.
No, it's not. You know, when I first started speaking and, you know, I first started working with companies, I really felt like one day I would be, you know, talking to a me 10 years ago. You know, someone once asked me, what would you tell yourself 10 years ago? And that's how I approach this. I feel like it's allowed me to really raise people up that maybe are in that position I was in 10 years ago, imposter syndrome. I don't know about this. Am I doing things correctly? And, you know, just to, you know, hopefully corral some of those people to say, nope, go get it. You can do it too.
Right. And then figure out what's right for you. There was a time, gosh, 20-ish years ago, where I worked for all the big companies in ophthalmology, but in the last decade, I've worked for none of them. I only want to be involved with a new startup. And it's honestly, I want the excitement of building a new startup, and I want stock ownership, to be honest.
I love it.
So I don't want to start with a small company. Small is good for me now. I've changed gears.
But isn't that funny how you had to do what you did to get to this point, Uday, where you're right. Like, well, this is really what inspires me. This is what makes me passionate, because you couldn't do what you're doing now if you weren't passionate about it. You wouldn't be able to, you know yourself so truly if you didn't go through those periods of like, I'm going to try this and see how it goes. And it's okay to fail or, you know, mess up or not give the best talk or not have the best success out of a surgery. My dad always said, you know, if you don't have complications, you're not doing surgery. Right. And that was really hard to hear, because I would go into this deep depression, you know, if someone had a capsular bag rupture. But guess what? Patients can have beautiful outcomes even in those moments. And so it's slowing down again and going back to the basics of, don't rush through a case. Be prepared. Have your tools ready. I always have our team pull things that I think I'll need extra for each individual case so that I'm always prepared and ready. And so is our team. So there's no stress. There's no, you know, blood pressure elevation. There's no voices being raised. We just continue on. And we're going to find that, you know, broken haptics as we unload a lens, or, you know, again, a nice hole in the bag. What do you do? Go slow. And you can still have beautiful outcomes if, you know, you go back to the basics. And so I think that's, you know, been my passion in inspiring others, you know, as they're thinking through their journey and what kind of drives them, is to say, be you, but also don't be afraid to take those risks.
That's such great advice. What good final closing words do you have here now for you're 44, you said. So you're about 12, 15 years into good solid practice. Now, yep. If there's a young ophthalmologist, let's say 30-ish years old, and she or he is listening like, what am I going to do the next 10 years? What's the best advice you could give yourself for 10 years ago or for these young doctors just starting off? What's important?
I love talking about goals. You know, what is your one-year goal? What's your five-year goal? And what's your 10-year goal? I think it's really important to actually physically, in a notebook that you carry around, have that with you at all times. Because I look back on those moments and I'm like, oh my goodness, this came true. This happened. But it's because I was constantly looking at those goals of what I wanted to see myself as, you know, in a year or 5 years or 10 years. And again, be your authentic self. Don't be afraid to take risks. If there's something you want to learn, write it down and go find someone to mentor you, or, you know, go to cataractcoach.com to learn a new skill set, because these videos are broken down so eloquently. Or for me, that, you know, wanted to learn more plastics. Right. I went to Sioux Falls to be mentored by my younger oculoplastic fellow. And that just helped me grow and expand and become more confident and comfortable in what I was doing. And so definitely that, you know, write down your goals, stick with them, have that vision, know yourself, and remember that your team around you is going to be critical. So make sure that you develop good leaders and you lead well.
Oh, what great advice. You know, I wish I'd heard of that last, you know, 3 minutes when I just finished my residency, like, you know, it would have been so much. You're never taught these things in residency. And I was so dumb. I was so stupid and naive that when I was a senior resident, I was just about to graduate. And I said to myself, can't wait till I'm in practice. It'll be so much easier than residency. Like the exact opposite.
The exact opposite. And take some business and AI courses while you're at it too.
Right. Yeah. It's all great advice. But I want to thank you again for doing this podcast. I can't believe I'm talking for an hour already. The time has just gone by like that. So we'll feature your video tomorrow, the day after this podcast. We'll have your surgical video, whatever you want. And down below, we'll put a list of all your links, whatever you give me. And then I'll remind our listeners and viewers, remember, we got a new Cataract Coach video every single day. We got a new Retina Rounds video every day. We got a new Cataract Coach podcast every single week, and a new Retina Rounds podcast every single week. And you know, you can find all this stuff on Amazon, Apple, Google, YouTube, Spotify, wherever you want. So until next time, I'll catch you later.